And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I don't know that we can get past this, but we certainly have to start with DeZoran Mamdani's staggering victory in the Democratic primary in New York City. I mean, it's what everybody who talks about politics talked about for the whole of the week. So let's talk about it. What do you think? What effect do you think it might have in Democratic Party politics and in national politics? Or do you think it has no effect?
Well, I think it has the potential to have a pretty good effect on particularly the national policy. First, you got to talk about New York City, which is unique in terms of things. When you look at the whole field that was up, you wonder in a city of 8+ million people, if they couldn't do better than what they had. You know, you had Andrew Cuomo, who was a warmed over, failed governor in many respects, who was driven from office by accusations of sexual misconduct. You had
Mamdani,
who kind of came out of nowhere, in many ways is an unknown product, who has a lot of let's call them interesting positions that probably are beyond his capability delivering on some of them. You know, he should have run on the rent is too damn high part. Remember that guy?
But effectively he did.
Yeah, effectively he did. You've got Mayor Adams, who...
Well, he didn't run.
Who disappeared from this primary because he wasn't running as a Democrat. And you have a Republican, Curtis Sliwa, who's, God, how many times has he run before or whatever? I mean, he's a vestige of what, the 60s and early 70s?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he still wears the beret, but...
No, but he is an early incarnation of the Proud Boys.
Yeah. The vigilante.
Yeah, he's a vigilante guy. That's right. The fellow who shot up the New York City subway system. That's what he is. The fact that he wears a beret has nothing to do with the Black Panthers. It has everything to do with the Green Berets.
Yeah, well, he was, you know, that was their guardian angels, right? Wasn't that their name?
That's the name of his group. They still exist. They got about a dozen members. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had this menagerie of candidates running. Mamdani kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, if you looked at the tracking of the polling, he was down. You didn't even see him. And then all of a sudden, in the last 2-3 weeks, there was this total drop off from Cuomo and this rise of Zoran. And it reminds me, reminded a lot of people of the AOC phenomenon. He seemed to use many of the same tactics he was using. He was charismatic in his own right. He was using social media. He was energized, you know, ethnically different from the rest. I mean, AOC beat the party chair of that area of New York, Joe Crowley,
who was the third ranking Democrat in the Congress.
He was in line to be the speaker after Nancy Pelosi. Everybody thought he would be. I actually met him. Matt Cartwright brought him to Scranton for the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick dinner. Matt was kind of kissing up to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had him for as a fundraiser for brunch the next day. And it was really an old-time pal. But those old-time pals in New York seem to be disappearing. A bunch of them either didn't run or got beat the last time. I mean, who's left there? Jerry Nadler, who's barely hanging on.
Well, the old-time politicians in New York City, who you know, you associated with Tammany Hall,
right,
with the anti-reform Democratic movement that existed in the 60s and had a whole series of clubs in opposition to them, that group actually doesn't exist outside of Harlem. The Harlem political establishment is the remnants of the old-time Democratic Party in New York City. The inheritors of the Charlie Rangel machine.
Right. And Charlie just left us. It's interesting that Cuomo had the endorsement of Bill Clinton, who has his headquarters in Harlem.
On 125th Street. That's exactly right. But there were a lot of other candidates that, I mean, don't forget, the primary had, I think, 9 candidates, including the controller.
Yeah, Lander.
Brett Lander, right.
Who managed to get himself arrested in order to get publicity for his campaign, protesting ICE.
But a very fine controller. Nobody ever criticized him as a controller. He was an exemplary controller. Then another candidate was the previous controller, Scott Stringer. Then there was Adrian Adams, the chairman of the city council. Who not related to the mayor. Then there was another black fellow who's an assemblyman in Brooklyn, who I don't know why he's running, except he wanted to be mayor, but he had no particular base. But the point is, they were no different than the crop of candidates, even a good crop of candidates, that you would see running in any major city with all kinds of interesting policy points of view. On the other hand, even though Zohran seems to have come out of nowhere, when his campaign's lawyer was interviewed on election night, the point he made was that Zohran's been at this and building this campaign for 10 years and making these plans and setting up organizations and working on it for 10 years. And that ties into what you always talk about, which is you got to keep at this stuff. You got to be persistent. It's only
long-term.
Long-term. That's exactly right. It's like stand-up comedy. The guy who does ad-lib has been doing a lot of rehearsal. There is no such thing as ad-lib. Anyway, Zohran's been at this apparently for 10 years. So he didn't come out of nowhere. It was the culmination that appeared out of nowhere because people didn't notice what he was doing. But he was doing it.
Now, I'd like to pull back a little bit, because this also has, I think, some implications for both the state of New York politics and then the national politics.
And if it has a national implication, it has an international implication.
Yeah. Now, the state of New York, there are two people that you've got to talk about. One is the governor, who wants to run again. Who did not endorse him, but came out and congratulated him. But, you know, I think wants to keep her distance from him. And then they have Chuck Schumer. And already there's been talk about Schumer being primaried by AOC. And there's some polling that indicates that AOC could beat him in a Democratic primary. After the election, Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader in the House of Representatives, again, both congratulated Zohran, but they stopped short of a full-throated endorsement. So,
First of all, you have to know that Hochul is not very popular.
Right.
And she may not become the governor. She may not become the Democratic candidate for governor. It's not clear. She's not a popular governor. Cuomo wasn't popular, and she is not popular among Democrats. That's number one. Number two, Jeffries is in an interesting position. Jeffries represents a Brooklyn district. Now, he won that district by beating a fellow named Charles Barron, who ran for Congress and was opposed by the entire Democratic machine. Charles Barron is a black nationalist who was a city councilman who belonged to the same group that Mayor Eric Adams belonged to. It was a group organized by a black minister with a church in downtown Brooklyn, Reverend Daughtry, a leading civil rights activist in New York, a kind of a left-wing alternative to Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton was always considered a pal of the gangsters, but Daughtry was opposed to that and was a clean guy. Nobody ever accused Daughtry of, you know, being corrupt. And he organized this group of young black politicians, politically interested guys, mostly men. And the two leading lights were Charlie Barron, who was a brilliant speaker, and then later Eric Adams, who became the mayor. Barron was a city councilman for years. His wife became a state assemblywoman. And he ran for Congress. And Jeffries was recruited by the Democratic machine to defeat him, and did defeat him. And that is Jeffries' political background. It would be astounding that Jeffries would support Mamdani. Mamdani represents everything that Jeffries got into politics to oppose. So it's interesting.
Yeah, but you have to read the votes. And
that's right.
You know, and see where it's at. Again, it might be surface support without any support underneath. It might be support underneath without trying to show that you are supporting.
Well, in New York State, there was a woman who became won the Democratic primary to be the mayor of Buffalo. The chairman of the state Democratic Party organized the campaign against her in the general election.
Right. They defeated her.
And they defeated her. That's exactly right. Now, how he managed to maintain his position as head of the party when the party rule says you have to support, not oppose, a party candidate, I don't quite know. But, you know, rules ought to be broken by people who are in power. So the same thing could happen in New York. Yeah. In New York City, I mean.
The rap against
Mamdani is, you know, he's a socialist. The immediate accusation was he's a socialist. And therefore, how can he possibly be the mayor? Or he's inexperienced. He's never run anything. How could he be the mayor? The greatest mayor in the history of New York City, and possibly, according to historians, the greatest mayor was Fiore LaGuardia. And he was maybe the best mayor in the history of America, of any city. Fiore LaGuardia, before he became the mayor during the Depression, was a congressman. And before he was a congressman, he was an office worker. He managed nothing. He ran nothing. When he was a congressman, he passed one bill, the Norris LaGuardia Act. I don't want to get into it. It was a very important act, but that's the only thing he passed, one bill. And his party designation in the Congress was, you'll love this, Republican-socialist. So if you attack Mamdani, you got to overlook LaGuardia. Because in every respect, he kind of tracks LaGuardia.
Yeah, but to New York, the only thing that people remember about LaGuardia is that it's an airport. There might be a generation that still remembers him reading the comics to the kids during the newspaper strikes. But
I don't care what people remember. The point is, he was a great mayor.
Yeah.
The point that people say Mamdani can't do the job? Nonsense. LaGuardia did the job. He didn't have any background different than Mamdani.
You know, politics is full of people who had great backgrounds and failed. I guess the Peter principle at work. And it's other people who came out seemingly out of nowhere that turned out to be pretty good or near great. You have Harry Truman, who most people didn't know about. When you look at all the things he accomplished.
Well, how about FDR? He was regarded as a playboy.
Yeah. And you had that. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. But, you know, you have this socialist tag. And remember, that's how the Republicans have been using that forever. I mentioned Truman. Truman had that famous saying that socialism is what the Republicans call everything that helps ordinary people. But it, in national politics, it's far different than in New York City politics. And I think that the Trump people are thrilled with Zohran's victory. They're going to use him, as they've used AOC and the Squad, as the boogeyman. See what the Democrats are going to bring you. You know, they're going to use that. There's no such thing as a free lunch, and these people are going to, you know, take from you, and they're going to give to people who aren't worthy of it, and it's going to bankrupt the country, blah, blah. Meanwhile, while Trump is bankrupting the country, it's...
And taking from the people.
And taking from the people. Although as of this time, they're having a hard time passing this big, beautiful bill. The parliamentarian of the Senate said not so fast on a number of key provisions, and there's internal fighting among the Republicans. There are the so-called moderates. Let's face it, they're barely they're less radical than the really crazy Republicans. Yeah, the Mike Lawlers in New York, the ones in the swing districts.
Yeah, basically, it's the people who want to take it all away versus the people who want to take most of it away.
Yeah, Mike Lawler, who's fighting on this thing called the salt tax, which is credit for state and local taxes in your federal return. And then you have the Senate people who are divided, who are saying the House bill didn't go far enough, that it spent too much money.
Right.
We have to cut back even more versus the people who say, you know, our constituents are starting to wake up and find out what's in this bill, and it ain't good for us. The Tom Tillises in North Carolina, who's got to run next year in North Carolina, who's saying, wait, this is going to devastate us in rural North Carolina. Now you have that.
And then you have thoroughly dishonest people like Nancy Mace, who all of a sudden is now trying to get the Trump administration to continue its subsidies to the Mercedes electrical vehicle plant in South Carolina because it has a lot of jobs in her district, although she's against electrical vehicles.
Right. And these are the Republicans who voted against Infrastructure Act and then went to all of the ribbon cuttings where the taking credit for the infrastructure that was being put in place there.
Precisely.
This is what it is. And I mean, there's others in the, you know, you have the Rand Pauls and the Republicans. You have Massey from Kentucky, who's so infuriated Donald Trump that he's trying to find a primary opponent for him.
But Massey is very interesting. You know, they just had the vote on the resolution introduced by Tim Kaine of Virginia, insisting that the Congress has to declare war if Trump wants to go to war with Iran. And because bombing Iran, an act of war, is not within his authorization, it's within the Congress's authorization. It's illegal to do what he did. So there was a vote, and the vote was a party line vote. The Republicans all voted that the Congress should not necessarily have to authorize going to war, and one Democrat and voted with the Republicans, and one Republican voted with the Democrats. The Republican who voted with the Democrats was Massey. The Democrat who voted with the Republicans was Fetterman. How about that?
Yeah. Well, politics make strange bedfellows, as they say. By the way, I don't know if you saw one of the so-called moderate, Don Bacon from Nebraska.
He quit.
He's in that one district. Said he's not going to run again. Right. Now, whether that is a signal that he now is going to feel free to vote his conscience rather than party line, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Previous Republicans who weren't going to run again still voted with the party. I'm thinking of Lamar Alexander, for instance, down in Tennessee. The big difference that we've seen now, as in previous decades, is the complete collapse of the Republican Party in a congressional Republican Party in terms of standing up for their own prerogatives their constitutional prerogatives.
Well, it's become a disciplined parliamentary party, right?
Yeah. That's something that the founders did not really contemplate.
No.
That they thought that Congress would be a check on a runaway executive. The other thing that they contemplated, although they didn't give a lot of thought, was the courts. We have a Supreme Court. Essentially, it's a rogue court in terms of doing its duty on constitutional things, and its deference. They've adopted, particularly the Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch wing of it, that there's virtually nothing that the executive can do that we will stop.
But this is very important because the political strategy for a lot of liberal activity has been rely on the courts. Because, liberals thought that, the Brown versus Board of Education court is the Supreme Court, but it's not the Supreme Court. It's the Roberts Court. And when the trans people had a strategy of relying on the Supreme Court to defend trans rights, they lost. Because the Supreme Court wouldn't defend. Alito is not defending trans rights. It's just that simple. No. He's not going to do it. Now what's happened is the rulings this week, which I hope you'll talk about, really show that you cannot rely on the courts. Now you've got a real problem.
Well, what else is there? Where have people been? The amnesty decision clearly showed that you can't rely on the courts. And people, as you said, they thought, well, the court, everything, stare decisis. And we saw, in terms of Roe v. Wade, even though the three or four justices are on the court, got up in their hearings and said, we believe in stare decisis. In other words, what the previous courts have ruled on, didn't hesitate when it came.
What they believed in was that they should become justices. That's what they believed in.
Yeah, and Susan Collins, I think she's the winner of the Miss Gullible in the Senate beauty pageant type of thing. She had to know. She just used that as a justification for her vote.
Right.
She's going to be up next year as well. This court has gone down the line. It's this theory that emerged in the Scalia era, in the 80s, of a unitary presidency, where the president just has all these far-flung powers in the executive branch, to run over the executive branch. The ruling this week, I think, is a foreshadowing. I don't know if birthright citizenship, which everybody has presumed to be a rock solid bedrock of American of your rights as an American if you're born here, that could be on the chopping block.
Well, Justice Sotomayor says all your rights are on the block.
Yeah,
all of them.
Yeah. Clarence Thomas has foreshadowed that as well. Remember in one of his dissents or one of his concurrences, I can't remember, where he said, with the Roe v. Wade, overturning Roe v. Wade, you know, we should be taking a look at everything, the birth control cases, everything except interracial marriage is on the chopping block. The court kind of punted on making the basic decision whether birthright citizenship means if you're born here, you've got all the rights. They're saying no, your parents have to be legal or intend to remain here, that kind of thing.
Although the language couldn't be more clear.
No,
for the textualists who say, well, it depends on what the language is, but the language is dead simple. It's not unequivocal. You're born here, you're a citizen. End of story.
Yeah, well, they say, well, that only applied to slaves, and it was beyond that type of thing. And meanwhile, I want to get back a little bit to the Democratic Party, because I don't know if you saw. There were a couple polls out this week, and Pew did an interesting study on the 2024 election and why Harris lost. And there were some things that we knew. There was a major shift among certain voters, Blacks and Hispanics and Asians, toward the Republican Party in that election. Particularly among Hispanics, that the Democrats heretofore had taken pretty much for granted that the Hispanics are going to be with us given what Trump is doing. But the Democratic Party really never understood the nuances of that vote. The other thing that study...
And just to make a point, getting back to Mamdani, election reversed that. He developed his strength was precisely in those areas that had drifted away from the Democrats when Harris was the candidate.
Right. The other thing that they found out is they said that the turnout, that she didn't turn out the voters. And they talked to people who didn't vote. And it turns out that had they voted, Trump still would have won, according to their polling, which is something. But getting back to Mamdani. That might make that Trump victory just sort of an exception to the rule. But the Democrats have a lot of work to do. We've talked about it here on a grassroots level. They are still not fully organized.
Organized. That's very polite.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they are not fully organized. They also are not united. They also don't know what they stand for.
Well, they do have policies, but they're not selling them. Are the Trump people are able to neutralize those policies through all sorts of methods?
Let's take a pause right here. We're running out of time, and we're starting something that really requires and should be talked about. Let's talk about this next week. The Mamdani victory in the primary really opens this discussion in different ways within the Democratic Party, because he did have a policy. He did talk about it. He was relentless on it. And he did communicate, and very well.
And the rents will still be too damn high.
That's right.
Don't forget, this coming week is the 4th of July. So we're going to be talking about that. I will have returned from my inspirational trip to Philadelphia, and we'll see how it fits in with all the fireworks.
Will Trump get his bill voted on? Forget passed. How about voted on? He set July 4th as the target. Now he's saying we can let it go by it. The target doesn't count.
Well, I still think he might. I still think he might. He has a way of pressuring people and getting his quote-unquote triumph of his will. So,
all right. Very good. I like that. Triumph of the will. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time. same place.